Fork Tales, a podcast that feeds the food and beverage world. Fork Tales is brought to you by Pavone Group and Vigor, a branding and marketing agency for restaurant, beverage, and hospitality brands. Learn more at vigorbranding.com. If you love what we're serving up, please give Fork Tales a 5-star review on your podcast service of choice. Think of it as a tip for good service.
All right. Hey there, Fork Tales listeners and viewers. I am really happy to be joined today by a good friend of mine, Doug Renfro. Doug is president of Renfro Foods. And I had to say that like 25 times because somehow the word foods after Renfro, I mean, foods and Renfro is easy. Renfro Foods, I just struggle. But anyway, he is the president of Mrs. Renfro's Salsa. Not only are they a family-owned company, which always is interesting, but they're one of the most innovative companies I know. Doug, welcome, and thank you very much for joining us and for your time.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
So, you know, I'm going to start off by pointing out I've been very fortunate to know you and to have your product, and it's phenomenal, and I'm not just saying that. Case in point, I have 3 jars behind me that were supposed to be props for this presentation. There were actually more than 3, but my favorite one was sent to me, which I thank you for, and I ate it. So I don't have as many jars here as I should probably. But anyway, it's a phenomenal product. And, you know, anyway, I appreciate you sending us some samples. So tell us about you and Renfro Foods and the story and your role in the company.
Sure. We're an 84-year-old family business, and all the development has been organic. My granddad distributed grocery items in the 30s and made it through the Depression and thought, you know what'd be fun? We'll quit my job and start a company out of the house. So in 1940, he and my grandmother started out of their house, and for 12 years or so, they distributed grocery items and flavored vinegars and different things, spices. And around 1952, they moved into the core building that I actually sit in. We have now 2 city blocks and the street in between, but we were just one little brick building. And he started making syrup, and I like to point out there were no maple trees harmed. And then they made relishes. And, you know, when I do a trade show, like we'll be in New York together 2 weeks from now, and it's a fancy food show, and people will walk up and say, are these your grandmother's recipes? And I always say, no, but wouldn't that be cool? You know, nobody ate Chipotle in 1940, 50, 60, 70. It's all very organic dynamic. So when I was a kid, we just made Southern relishes, which had the velocity of a snail. So we had no money. And then my dad and my uncle got into taco sauce, thank God, in the 70s, which became picante, which became salsa. And separating that, you know, for a moment, I worked at the nastiest jobs we had, you know, every summer, 6th grade through high school. And in college, I lived at home and mixed the spices in the afternoon, went to school in the morning, very glamorous life. So I got out of college early, went to work for Ross Perot's company at the time, EDS. I was there when they sold it to General Motors, got, you know, wearing a coat and tie every day, going to Detroit. My car did not smell of oregano anymore. Very cool. Good people, smart people, good money. Got my MBA, CMA, and some other acronyms. But, you know, corporate life will suck the soul out of your body. So came back 32 years ago and working with my cousins, my dad, my late uncle, it's been a lot of fun. And as to your point, you know, we weren't getting a lot of sales with mild, medium, and hot. So we started creating things like craft beer salsa, mango habanero, tequila thing, and not at a gourmet store housewarming gift price, but at an everyday in your grocery cart price. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we're fortunate now to 600 brands in the country. Where Mrs. Renfro's is number 8. I caution people not to get excited because if we doubled, we'd be number 8. The big folks are big.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hey, they are. But you know what, though? Your product is fantastic. And in this day and age, we do a ton of CPG work, right? And craft and the originality and having a real story is super important to people. And so products like yours, I know you've been doing this for forever, you guys, but it's a really great time for this type of brand and this type of product. And again, it's all about the quality. So I the mango habanero, as I said, is my favorite. What's your favorite?
Weirdly, that is also my favorite.
Oh, nice.
And I've, you know, almost all the items now are recipes I've gotten to create over the years with my vast lack of culinary training. But we, you know, I would look at things like mango habanero specifically. I was at a white tablecloth restaurant. I saw mango habanero like chutney on halibut, and I filed it away as something maybe 5 years later we could sell every day in the grocery stores. And that's exactly how it turned out. And even then there was pushback internally about, you know, that sounds like a bizarre combination. And of course, it's been our number two seller now for quite some time nationwide, Canada, UK. But it's also, you know, a normal trend now. And that's what you're seeing, like, you know, fast food places now have Carolina Reaper French fries, which, you know, 20 years ago, nobody knew what it was. 10 years ago, it was crazy, exotic, ridiculous. And now it's almost an everyday thing.
Right, right.
So are you Mrs. Renfro then, if you're making all these recipes?
if you take the, my grandmother's on the side of the label. If you put a wig on me and shave the beard, I think that's what you get.
That's fantastic. Yeah. So, okay. So talking about family here, I mean, you know, some family owned companies, you and I know a lot of people have are part of family owned companies. Some families require members and future leaders to spend time outside the company. Was your time required, and did you find that time valuable? And then, did you always plan? I know you worked there when you were young. Did you always plan on coming back to the company? Talk a little bit about that.
Sure, my time was not required. Frankly, when I got out of college, if I had come to work here, I would have been chopping cabbage. The executive positions were filled by my dad and my uncle. And it's such a tiny. We're small now. We were tiny, tiny back then. So I had to go somewhere else if I wanted to not wear jeans and be covered with cabbage and onions. And I think it was wildly helpful. Like when I came back, I'd been, you know, in charge of corporate accounting for a $1 billion company in some areas. And my uncle was still doing pricing on a legal pad with his hand desk calculator. And I said, like, here's a spreadsheet and it's going to instantaneously recalculate the cost of thousands of items in a millisecond. He saw what that did. And he's like, can you do that every 90 days from now on? You know, having the discipline and learning and the networking was just fabulous. And I will tell you, we needed a filtration system for the fourth generation. So I said, we can't hire 14 people just because they want to work here. And I said, in that case, for that gen, yes, you have to work somewhere. You have to graduate college. You have to work somewhere else for at least 2 years in a real job. And then we can talk about management training, management track. And today we have zero fourth generation working here, but we have had off and on about half of them have done so well they could not remotely afford to take a pay cut and come back here.
Yeah, that's great. And my rule has always been 2 years and one promotion. If you want to come in the family, in the business, you got to, you know, college education, 2 years and one promotion. So, and you know what? Neither of my girls seem to be remotely interested. So they're probably smarter. They got a good education.
and we've got our age range on Gen 4 is like 23 to 38. So you know, some of them, I didn't come back till I was 29, I think. So there's, you know, we've got lots of time. I'm not ancient yet, but you know, I've still got some time in me.
So. Yeah. Well, yeah, sure. Of course you do. And now you said in one of your quotes, it was something like if people say their family business journey, if people have said their family business journey has been a smooth road, they're a smooth liar. talk a little bit about the struggles and the family and all that kind of stuff. Just, you know, like some of the things you have to overcome, because it's always amazing to me. Just, you know, what all is involved there.
Yeah, it's funny. I've spoken to the TCU family business class like 8 years in a row now. And I usually start out with, how much time do I have? but is anyone recording this? Unlike you. But, you know, one of the things you deal with is like my late uncle and my dad, they see me in diapers when I start talking because that's how they met me. Mm-hmm. And it's hard. You know, they've seen you be a silly kid and get in trouble. And now I'm telling them they need to change the branding. And you're like, you know, what's this little kid saying? Shut up and get back over there. And frankly, if you don't have, you know, if you don't demand this much of your ego to be around, one of the secrets I tell them is get somebody without your last name to suggest the same idea you've been suggesting that's been ridiculed. And suddenly it's a great idea. Mm-hmm. And actually it becomes their idea. And as long as you can live with that, you know, if it's all for the greater good. You know, I don't have to get credit for everything and I don't have to get immediate results. It's slow, steady progress to me. Cause you and I have seen a lot of people that, you know, skyrocket up and then skyrocket back down.
Yep, that's right.
It's about gradual process. We have no investors. You know, we just use bank debt when we need it. It's all, you know, still family controlled. And because of that, it's more slow, steady path. But yeah, well, I think, you know, I've told you that my dad and my late uncle had a rule. They were 50-50. They had a little sister who didn't work here, but she could be a swing vote. But they had an agreement. They never, ever did anything important if it wasn't a unanimous vote. They didn't go get a tiebreaker. So now my cousins and I who run it, we have 84% of the votes of the company, and we could outvote each other on certain things. And we've done the same thing. If it's, I'm talking about a capital expenditure, branding campaign, a new flavor, big things, we have to be unanimous or we don't do it. I just assume I'm missing something if I can't convince them both and vice versa. And that's key. I've seen friends who make a lot more money and have a lot more wealth who have a sibling they can't talk to, they've never spoken to in 20 years, and it breaks their parents' heart. And we've chosen not to do that. We've gone with family harmony, so we sub-optimize, but it's a family business. We can do that.
Yep. And you know, that's really important. I mean, I know you obviously get it because you said all those words. But you know, when you have the family involved, I mean, you know, the family, it's important. I don't know that there's anything more important than family. And you're, you know, the company is what supports the family. And so if they can't all be if there can't be harmony, at the end of the day, what do you have? And so I admire you for that, the way you're handling it. Because as you're right, we've seen a lot of more, unfortunately, probably more examples than not where, you know, somebody gets iced out or they're not talking or, you know, the families are completely dysfunctional now, you know, but maybe the business survives or maybe it doesn't. And that's just tragic. So speaking of your Uncle Bill, you said, I think one of your other quotes in an interview said something like, you can be brutally honest with each other about ideas. He could call you an idiot. It's no big deal. So, I mean, that's a benefit, right? That level of honesty.
Yeah, that's key. Is that I famously tell that story that like I would say to him or he to me that, you know, I think what you just said was the most stupid thing I've ever heard from a business perspective. Where do you want to go to lunch? Because we didn't, you know, there was no personal aspect to it. And that's key. If you take business things personally, that screws the relationships all up.
Mm-hmm. So now back to the salsa, you have 20 different flavors. I know you're the one that's coming up with a lot of the different formulas. How are you finding that inspiration? I mean, just out there in the world. I mean, you said that the mango habanero came from a meal you had somewhere. Is that pretty much what you're looking at, just trends and things like that?
Yeah, I tell people I'm cursed to have to eat at the nicest restaurants in the nation and, you know, read cool food magazines and see what's going on. But yeah, it is that simple, which is not actually simple, is always looking around. You want to see what's on the edge. You know, we developed a bacon queso for a customer. And as you know, a lot of what we do is creating things for other people. Our name's nowhere on it. Mm-hmm. There's no indication we made it. But people look to us for ideation. I've had grocery chains come to me and they're like, what should we do for a private label salsa? It's going to be our first time. And I don't mean we'll never make the mild, medium and hot for the big folks. But if they want a pineapple chipotle or something, we're one of the few players that they will come to. And I'll give them my ideas. Half the time they run with that, say, make some recipes for us. Half the time they do the total opposite of what I suggested. As long as they pay us, I'm fine.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, yeah, you're looking at. And as you know, with trends, most of them won't become a mango habanero or a ghost pepper, which are top sellers. You know, I thought pomegranate chipotle was a great idea. Not many other people did. So, you know, you end up DC and, you know, SKU rationalization is painful, but we do go through that.
Well, and you have to balance that. Like you can be out there too far on the trends. I mean, at Quench, we're big on trends. We do trends presentations every year, and I know you've seen them and been a part of them. And, it, you know, so you see these things, they're out there. You want to kind of be first to market, but that can be dangerous because, you know, maybe the pomegranate is going to be something that'll be fantastic. Maybe in another 6 months, if you're too far out in front, you can, you know, get delisted, as you said, but if you would just sit back and be hot, medium and, you know, mild, I mean, that's no good either. So I really admire what you've done. And I think the branding you've done and the flavoring you've done, is fantastic. And just for all honesty, I don't do the branding. I mean, your design, package design stuff is impeccable, and I've always been a big fan of it. So, congratulations on that. So, I mean, now, how many do you try and make? I mean, like, is there in your mind, do you say, hey, we should come up with 2 new SKUs a year? Is it sort of like when I find something I like, we'll make it? How does that work?
But it's 2 different answers based on when it was. When I came back, we weren't really in grocery stores per se. We were in fruit stands at the time and different things. So we were fighting for our lives. My cousins and I needed more money. Our dads wanted more money. We needed it. You were raising families.
Yeah.
And so we were literally being told no constantly, go away, because we had hot, medium, mild, and green taco sauce. That's all we had. And so with no permission, one day when nobody was looking, I added black beans to the medium. Then I added the habanero, which was crazy, exotic, sexy at the time, you know, super hot. And we would, my sales director and I, he's been with us 32 years and it's non-family. We would go to retailers around the country and in Canada and say, hey, I know you have a million sauces. Before you throw me out, we have a black bean and a habanero at an everyday price, not a gourmet price. It gives you variety. And they started saying, yeah, they're delicious. That makes sense. We love your company and your marketing and your products, and this will give us variety. And they started putting it in, and we were just, you know, making it up, praying. And so after that, we did a couple years later, we did Chipotle corn. We were early on Chipotle. Nobody could say it, including our own staff. I'd walk through the office and hear Chipotle. I'm like, oh my God, we can't pronounce our own product. Then when Chipotle, the chain, became big, they taught everybody. And then Jack in the Box made a hilarious ad about how to pronounce it. And so, yeah, I would look at things. You know, I saw ghost pepper in a chocolate bar. I've been watching it for a couple of years. When I saw it in a chocolate bar, I told the family, I think we can put it in salsa. My uncle thought we were going to get sued. So we put a crossbone skull on it, X scary hot. And the Today Show fell in love with it, gave us a solid minute on the Today Show back when we all watched TV and there were no streaming channels. Huge success. But at this point, now we're mature. And frankly, we're busier than ever on R&D, but it's all for food service, co-pack, and private label clients. With Renfro, what you'll see is the big chains will want you to give them two items with a significant slotting and kick out your two slowest ones. And I'm like, no, thank you. If you'll give us two more spots, incrementally, we'll take it. And that happens. But for now, when COVID hit, the supply chain fund and the inflation that followed that, frankly, we haven't come up with a new item since Blackberry Serrano was our last one.
Nice.
And we've kind of hunkered down. So, you know, maybe Pavone Pomegranate is next.
There you go. I love it.
Still thinking.
So what is the mix between branded sales, I'll say, and food service? Percentages.
And there's branded food service and then co-pack private label. Mm-hmm. So it's three, it's a triad, which is really nice. It really, you know, diversifies things for us. And we're sort of 40-45% Renfro and then split the rest of it between food service and other brands. Like that's great. Take you to a national retailer usually and show you, you know, 2 to 5 other brands that we make and not all salsas. You know, we're acidified foods, condiments, so we can do cheese in a jar, which God didn't mean to happen. barbecue sauce, relish, you know, sauces.
That's fantastic. That's very cool. So, I mean, the flavor thing again is brilliant, and I love all the different combinations, and they are delicious. You know, through my career, you know, again doing CPG for basically almost 30 years. I hate to say it. The agency's been around for 33 years, but doing the CPG thing for a good, I think, 25 years. Food. The flavor thing was almost, it almost seems a shortcut because there's a lot of expense involved in flavors. But like, I remember, okay, as dumb as this sounds, potato chips. It's like, you know, the plain potato chips still sell great, but put flavors in there. And we helped many snack food brands, currently hers, with a lot of their products and just adding new flavors all the time. Just the consumer loves it. It gets them excited. We even did it with tuna, which wow. I mean, adding flavor to tuna, you know, and it just, we blew sales out of the water. Now, again, the companies were the R&D behind it, but we were like all in for the sriracha flavored and all the different types of tuna flavors and it, you know, for Starkist, and it blew them out and the sales went through the roof. So, I mean, I know R&D and I know category extensions can be expensive, but I also think there's a sort of a hidden marketing excitement. It just, you know, it brings energy to the category. And again, when you see your products against across the shelf or those logo, those labels across, it's a really impressive a lineup. I mean, I obviously probably feel the same way. You wouldn't have so many, but I mean, I'm sure you're torn. Like, do we want another SKU? Do we not want another SKU? Can you talk just a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's challenging because everything in life, usually the 80-20 rule works. And ours, you know, we have 28 current Renfro SKUs. the top four do half the sales, you know, the top 7 or 70% of the sales. So you're like, well, why don't we just cut the rest of them? Because people want variety. And the people who want those second tier items, it's funny, on our online platforms, those will be our best sellers because they're so hard to get. And the people don't care what it costs. They just want it so badly. And you know, no matter what you do, I don't care if you have another 10 fantastic SKUs, the top four or five are going to be half your sales. If you go to a farmer's market and they got like 30 kinds of jelly, you'll inevitably find that two or three do most of the sales, but they get attention. People come over there because they want to taste, you know, coconut marmalade, but they end up buying peach.
Right. Well, I think I heard you say that the mango habanero is number two. What's number one?
Habanero, the one I was told internally would never sell much because it was so hot, but it'd be cute to have.
Wow.
And it's been number one for over 15 years and I can't eat it. Most things that are best sellers that I've created. And when I create for Renfro, my cousins get votes in our sales director. If it's non-Renfro, the customer rules, or I'll make up something. But for Renfro, I first cook with Microsoft Excel because we line price. It doesn't matter how good it is if we lose money on it because I can't charge more on just one item. So first I pre-cook it in Excel. And if it's going to work financially, then I do what I think is good. Then I bring in my cousins, and a lot like on the craft beer, we were about ready to take it to New York for the big show. And I was like, it's just kind of bland. And my cousin Becky was like, yeah, it needs something. So I threw in guajillo, ancho, and chipotle, small amounts. It's kind of a mid-range. And she's like, yeah, that's better. And then James might think it needs to be chunkier, who runs production, and our sales director might have an opinion. And so it is a village situation, but you're right. Right now we're like, it gives me a headache to think about another SKU because how much could it sell? Your home runs are about one a decade.
Yeah. So you said something very interesting there. And again, being in a CPG world, I have experience with that whole line pricing thing. So if I can ask, I'll say it this way. We had a client we worked with for, we built the brand. It was probably a good 18 years. And it was Turkey Hill Ice Cream. And Turkey Hill, like most brands, had a line price. But there was an awful lot of a difference in cost to make vanilla ice cream versus, let's say, like a Rainforest Crunch or anything with nuts and stuff, because the expense of those nuts,
right.
and people don't realize that. They just think it's $2 for $5, or, the price went up, or it's 89 cents more. But they don't realize that one flavor to another flavor could be a huge difference in the cost to make it. I have to imagine you run into that to a degree, and, is that something you have to deal with?
Absolutely. I think we lost money on every jar of raspberry chipotle we sold last year. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, we didn't sell many. But raspberry is an item that the price goes wildly up and down, fluctuates like crazy. And most things don't. They go up slowly or they sit still. But our craft beer salsa, you know, we don't make as much money on it, but it's fabulous and tastes great. But, you know, would I be thrilled if everybody just bought mild all day long? Absolutely. I could get a new car.
Yeah.
And that is exactly the challenging aspect. I mean, Blackberry Serrano, you know, making that worthy of the name. I get really annoyed when I go to a restaurant. They got a tomatillo pecan, you know, smoked watermelon sauce, and all I can taste is salt. I want everything on the label to be tasteable, but you can't afford always to do that as much as you'd like without losing money.
Right. Yeah. That's the difficult part of, I'll say, what you guys do. And that's putting product, quality product in a container, whatever your product is. It could be ice cream, salsa, it could be potato chips, it can be candy. It's just the flavoring, you can do it, but there's always these cost constraints, that line pricing thing. And, then there's the evil empires of the retailers, right? So,
but it's a delicate dance.
It is a delicate dance, and I don't envy you. So, but hey, you sent us a bunch of salsa. So, like, we've had a lot of parties at Pavone Group, and but we're gonna have our first salsa party coming up, so we're pretty excited about that. But as we know, you have recipes throughout the thing. So your salsas aren't just for tortilla chips. You have tons of recipes on your website that use salsa. So we'll have some fun. I'm gonna name a few recipes from your site that use salsa, and you can tell me if you've tried it and what you thought of it. You ready to roll?
Ready.
All right. We have the molten chili chocolate brownie with raspberry chipotle salsa.
That came out of a wine pairing dinner. I thought it was a winery owner, and we were at a charity event, and I thought she was inebriated. She would sober up later. No, she flew us out there and had her chef, and they had like 80 people bought tickets, and they paired a Renfro item with every course. And for dessert, they used the raspberry chipotle. I think they blended it with maybe raspberries and sugar also, but on chocolate, that did pair nicely.
Yeah, that's interesting. And that was your most expensive item, so maybe you don't want to sell too many of those brownies.
Please,
right?
Please don't buy too much of it.
All right, meatloaf with craft beer salsa.
I have not had that. I have had it with the roasted salsa, which has a really strong mesquite aspect to it.
Nice. All right, grilled, and this is also delicious, one of your products, but grilled peach salsa chicken with a peach salsa.
Yeah, back in the day when we still had to demo at the booth, that was our go-to. And it's funny, people think they're cooking. If you say, put a jar of peach salsa in a baggie, throw in the chicken breast, put it in the fridge for an hour or two, then grill it, they think they're like a gourmet chef. And it tastes delicious. You can reserve some of it. It'll caramelize on the grill, and then you can reserve like a third of it and pour it over just as you serve it. And that is delicious and crazy simple.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, a very good friend of mine owns a company called Gazebo Salad Dressing, and he sells way more salad dressing as a marinade than he does as a salad dressing. And it's really truly a salad dressing, but people figured out that, you know, marinating in these products. And I'm sure your products are phenomenal for that.
And I love any recipe that's take a whole jar and use
that's
it.
Right. That's right.
No tablespoon recipes.
Yeah. He realized that early on. It's like, well, you know, the more, especially guys, right? Guys are grilling. So what do? They dump the whole jar, to your point.
Absolutely.
You know, we're not going to spare anything. So that's the perfect consumer right there. All right. Spicy spaghetti sauce with medium salsa.
I don't recall having that. I think my cousin Becky pre-cooked everything before we would let it be on a label back in when we started doing this. I probably sampled it, but she's our, she cooks as my wife does too. They're both excellent cooks and will actually whip these things up. I'm gluten-free too, but my wife can find gluten-free pasta, put that on. I'll tell her Michael said we had to taste it.
There you go. That's it. So the last one is Mexican fudge with green jalapeno salsa. This one isn't a chocolate fudge. It's more of a cheese.
Yeah. When I came back 32 years ago, that was the only recipe we had. And it's still the most popular. My aunt came up with that, interestingly. And it's cheddar cheese, eggs, and green salsa. And you just add more green salsa if you want it spicier, and you put it in a pan, you throw it in the oven for 40 minutes, you go get ready for the party, whatever, take it out, slice it up, put it on Triscuits or whatever, and people love it. It's gone, especially when it's warm and you serve it that way. We've called it cowboy cobbler. I mean, there's a million things, but it's just three ingredients. Like, even I can't screw it up.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said that when you do R&D, it's your cousins get involved, but you also said like the really hot, you can't eat. Like is that your palate? Is it just, you don't really like super spicy, or how does that work?
My assistant, it's my R&D guru that I've got working with me now the last few years, he'll make me occasionally do a cutting of like ghost pepper queso in the morning. I'm like, really? That's my breakfast. And with ghost pepper, habanero, Carolina Reaper, I can taste two or three, four samples and I'm done for a few hours, because then I'm torched and I can't distinguish anything different. Fortunately, I don't have to very often. When we're coming up with something, you know, I created a special triple hot Reaper for a business group you and I are in, and I tasted that till I couldn't see my feet. And we said, okay, it must be fine.
Well, that's fantastic. So, tell me, before we wrap up, like, what's next for Renfro Foods? I mean, can you share any details about what you're cooking up for the future? Anything you're excited about? Anything that's going on in the company or in the family?
Yeah, that's always a frustrating thing about doing so much private label and co-pack and food services. I can't talk about most of it, but it's really cool. We're doing things for people like the dairy-free queso, you know, that's nut-based, the things that my 87-year-old father is like, what? That's what my grandparents wouldn't have known. We do ethnic sauces. We're always reinvesting in the plant. My dad, my late uncle, my grandparents taught us, don't ever milk the company. So we doubled our shipping warehouse 2 years ago. We added a brand new two-story production employee break room with QA and production offices above it. We automated some more things on the food service line. We're always reinvesting. We're always looking, you know, for the future. We're doing licensing agreements with other brands where we handle the marketing for them. And you'll see, if you're going to be in the New York show, I think you'll see another brand in our booth that I can talk about then.
Super. That's awesome. I mean, congratulations on all the success. And I mean, you're a great president. You're always very self-deprecating, absolutely hilarious, lots of fun. And I think that just, it sort of just, you represent the brand in my mind in all the positive ways, you know. And I would love to see you put a wig on and try and emulate your grandma. That would maybe be fantastic. That's how you should work the booth. You should be Mrs. Renfro. So. All right. So I have one last question. I ask this of every guest, and it can't be your product. If you had one final meal, what would you eat, maybe where and why?
Well, I forgot the can't do your product. I was going to say, you got to start with chips and salsa. And frankly, I do eat lots of people's salsa. It's experimentation, but also, you know, I always ask people, you think the donut shop guy eats a donut every day? You know, you want to change it up. For lunch, for the entree, I think I'd have chicken tikka masala. My wife and I have become big fans of Indian food and eating it around the world. I would say one of the places in London, I think it's Brick Road, that has all their Indian restaurants. And then Grand Marnier souffle for dessert. It's one of those things that's too hard to make at home, but most so hard that it's hard to find it. There's a French restaurant locally. I can get it like occasionally. And that, now those don't go together, but you said final meals.
So that's it. Final meal. Yeah. That's what you got to do. That's fantastic. Well, Doug, thank you very much. I look forward to, I know you're doing an event in Fort Worth for all of us. That'll be fantastic. And I will see you at Fancy Food.
See you there. Thanks again for letting me play.
All right, pal. Appreciate it.